Okay, we'll just start in a moment. I'm just trying to set things up in the meeting. Okay, I'm sorry about the slight delay. Someone came to the door. I decided to pivot a little bit and switch from my intended shiur. I wanted to speak tonight about Bechira Chafshis and HaKadosh Baruch Hu denying it or depriving it from Paro as part of our assessment of Pesach and Pesach themes. But I started to worry that the seventh day of Pesach would be neglected a little bit. It's neglected a little bit because we only say half Hallel. There's no separate Kriyas HaTorah. We're a little bit chametz or matzah fatigued. But this time I'm especially worried because all the days were bleeding into each other. There was a lot of anticipation and motion or commotion surrounding the Seder. But on the first day, I just want to make sure that the last day gets its proper due and its proper attention. Given the fact that tomorrow is Erev Yom Tov and a lot of people may not tune in, I'll try to give an early shiur again around 4:30 or so. I just wanted to dedicate one or two days. What happened at the Yom Tov? Why is it different? Why is Chaf Aleph Nisan entirely separate day? Interestingly enough, just to mark the day, according to one position in the Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu was actually flung into the Nile on the 21st of Nisan, which makes it a very nice closure that the misery started in the waters of the Nile and the redemption climaxed the waters of the Yom Tov, which makes sense because Moshe is born in Zayin Adar. So at least Moshe's yard site is Zayin Adar, at least according to Chazal. Tzaddikim have the same yard site as the day they were born. They live full lives. They complete their year. So if Moshe was born Zayin Adar and he was hidden for about 3 months, as the Chazal tell us, so at around the time of Chaf Aleph Nisan, he begins to cry and they realize, Amar Men Yocheve, they can no longer conceal him or disguise the cry. So they have to put him into this little basket. So in terms of the timeline, but what really happens at the Yom Tov? What changes? A lot changes. A lot of prakim into Hillim, a lot of extra attention. But I want to focus on one pasuk, or two pasukim in Parshas B'Shalach today at least, and then tomorrow both in the two-minute videos as well as hopefully around 4:30 or so, whoever tunes in, obviously will be recorded and uploaded to Wayu Torah about some of the changes that take place at the Yom Tov on Chaf Aleph Nisan. So they see the Egyptians approaching. I'm reading from B'Shalach. So this is the first time that we have a record of a tefillah. Keep in mind, last week on Pesach at the Seder, we talked about them davening in Mitzrayim, but that's the read of Devarim, that they Vayishma Hashem et kolenu, Vayitzakul Hashem, Vayishma Hashem et kolenu, Vayitzakal Hashem. Sounds like from Devarim that they daven. If we read Shemos more literally, they were just groaning and moaning. So there's a bit of an offset between how Shmos describes it, and at least in Shmos, they don't really daven in Parsha Shmos. And in Devarim, at least they're davening in Mitzrayim. But at least as far as Sefer Shmos is concerned, the first formal davening happens at the Yom Tov. So, Vayitzaku El Hashem. How formal a davening it is, Vayitzaku B'nei Yisrael Hashem, but at least there's a frontal. They're not just moaning and groaning from the suffering. There's a conscious or cognitive act of davening. At which point Moshe assures them, Hashem yilachem lachem yatem tacharishon, essentially stop your davening or don't make any efforts, your davening has been accepted. So Moshe assures the Jewish people. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says something very interesting, which we'll get to later. Matitzak elai, why are you davening? Dabel b'nei Yisrael v'Yisrael. So we'll get to that a little bit later. Let's talk a little bit about the davening and what it takes to daven and what happens at the Yom Tov. So first of all, the way that Shlomo HaMelech views this is that the Jews are trapped and they're fledgling and they're weak and they're vulnerable, because in Shlomo's description, at least the way Chazal understand the Pesukim in Shir HaShirim, Yonasi Bechag VeHasela, my dove is scampering around these little rocks. Imagine an ocean with these rocks in between the water. B'Seser HaMadriga, sometimes you've got these rocks that are terraced down into the ocean. And Hashem says, Harini Marai Hashmini Es Kolech, Ki Kolech Arev U'Marech Nava, our famous song, Hashmini Es Kolech, Hashmini Es Kolech. So according to, again, in the context of Shir HaShirim, it's the male that yearns to hear the voice of the female from a distance. But the metaphor, at least according to one day, probably the prominent day of Chazal, that this is a very oceanic imagery. There's a lot of rocks and water and doves, sea doves that tend to habitate the cliffs near an ocean. And Hashem is saying, I want to hear your voice and I want you to daven. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our davening. As much as we feel that he's our service provider, we're davening to him to provide our needs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants that relationship, wants the conversation, wants the communication. I'm sure we could all identify as parents, those of us who are parents, or even as siblings. A lot of you are single and listening. We're in living situations. We wish people would speak to us about some of the things that are on their hearts. Sometimes we can't get them to speak to some of the things that are on their heart. And certainly these conditions have created a lot of weights on people's hearts. But Hashem wants the connection, wants the relationship, and wants our davening. In fact, in a very, very provocative statement, Chazal say that many women in Brachos suffer. Rivka is the only one. Rivka is barren. Her barrenness is, of course, intensified with Rachel. Sarah is barren for close to 90s. And because Hashem wants tfilos tzaddikos, Hashem wants their tfilos. It's a moral question. What does it mean for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to subject human beings to suffering just so they should daven? But part of the Amsav is to elicit that davening, the same way that davening isn't a gimme and wouldn't have been assured. And Brachos had women, men as well, but primarily women, not undergoing such hardships. Similarly, the Jewish people being fenced in like this little dove in order to elicit a voice that hasn't been uttered yet. And Hashem wants that voice. So many acts have been taken, and following HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the desert, Chesed Nirayach, and Karban Pesach, and all the Amunah, but somehow they hadn't yet found the voice of davening and have to be exposed to a real pressing danger to feel fenced in. So I think a lot of this probably resonates with our feeling fenced in, our feeling our world has changed suddenly, our feeling that maybe our davening beforehand wasn't always as fervent and as ardent and as authentic as it should be now. We identify very deeply with that little dove scampering, being fenced in between the ocean and the Egyptians. We're fenced in between our homes and the outside world, which seems a lot scarier than it did a month ago. And hopefully at the indoor world, the world of the family, creates some degree of security, but even there, it's hard to know. Now, there are two psukim in Shir HaSeyam that are familiar to all of us that are part of the davening. They stem from the davening and they enable the davening. One is, Vayaminu b'Hashem uvimosha avdo. There's a level of emunah, of trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they achieve at the Yamsuf. This is, of course, a little bit later, after they've davened and after Vayar Yisrael Ziyad HaGdola Asher Asal Hashem B'Mitzrayim. But they see the emunah, and the emunah is something which is building. Remember, even though they didn't daven in Shemos Vayamein Ha'am, they had emunah the night of Pesach, they followed through in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans. The climax is after the Egyptians are drowned, but there's a surge in emunah as they're left with little else. Emunah typically augments when you don't have resources and abilities and human capacity, so you fall back upon your emunah or bitachon, without distinguishing right now between emunah and bitachon. Now, emunah is crucial for davening. It's a very famous gemara, which is cited twice in Brachos, about juxtaposing geula to tefillah, where it says, kol ha'samach amar b'yachon, kol ha'samach geula tefillah, muftach lo shu ben ol haba. And we exercise this adjacent juxtaposition every day when we segue into our Shemoneh Esrei by reciting Yitzias Mitzrayim, which reaches its crescendo, Baruch Atah Hashem, Goel Yisrael. That's why we can't really speak, at least during Shacharis, between the Goel Yisrael and Shemoneh Esrei. A Marv will allow to interject or insert Tzarchei HaTfilah. So in terms of people who miss Minyanim, when it comes to the morning, we try to remind everyone to say Bracha, Morid Atal, we generally clap because we don't want to say anything. At night, you don't really have to clap. Since it's a tefillah need, at night you shouldn't say or insert anything far in between Gal Yisrael or the conclusion Ashkivenu and Shmona Esrei. But if it's a Tzarech HaTfilah, to remind people to say the same bracha, Yalav Yaba Atachanotanu, you're allowed to say it. So all you Gabayim out there who miss being a Gabay, or you miss your Gabay, Remember, next time you go over quietly to the Gabbai, so you don't have to bang at night. But either way, you want to create a sequencing between Geula and Tefillah. So a lot of questions, what makes Geula and Tefillah so crucial? So there's a sefer called Rabbeinu Yonah, Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah, one of the super commentaries, one of the super commentaries on Brachos, and Rabbeinu Yonah, actually very interesting. Rabbeinu Yonah was one of the leading opponents of the Rambam's work in the 13th and 12th and early 13th century. Rabbeinu Yonah of Gerona of Spain, he was a contemporary of the Ramban, he was a mechutan of the Ramban, he was also a cousin of the Ramban, and at the end of his life, he realized his errors and that he'd been too fanatical in trying to oppose the Rambam's writings and the proliferation of the Rambam's writings. So he tried to perform tshuva, part of his moving to Eretz Yisrael, a journey which he never successfully concluded, also writing a large sefer, which we don't really have, called Shari Tzedek. The part of the sefer we do have is Shari Tshuva, which is a very popular Mr. Sefer, learned the world over during Elul. And it's sad but ironic that one of the leading opponents against the Rambam's Svarim, his own Svarim really didn't survive history. We have his Talmidim writing his Chidushim of Brachos, with Chidushim Ben Yonah on Sanhedrin. He wrote on all of Shas. I mean, he really wrote on most of Shas, but his writings didn't survive, and it's a statement about fanaticism and some of the dangers and some of the needs for balance. And we're not sitting here, none of us to judge Ben Yonah Kadosh, but he tried to journey to Eretz Yisrael. He got stalled in Barcelona, where he died. So Rabbeinu Yonah, in his parish in Brachos, says that one of the reasons we juxtapose Geula with Tefillah is because Geula reminds us that we can trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's done it before. He's interceded before. He's rescued us before from dire situations. Because without the platform of Emunah, Tefillah is a little bit listless. If you don't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can provide the goods, as we would say, can service our requests, then the Tefillah is a little bit half-hearted. One of the Yud Gimel Midos we recite, Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim, we just read it, Shabbos Chol HaMoed, was Kael, Hashem, Hashem, Kael. So Kael is an interesting word because typically we associate Kael with Elohim, which is Midos HaDin. Why would we dropping mention of Midos HaDin during the Midos HaRachamim? So what most we've shown him in the Mefarshim, say, the Lagon and others, Eben Ezra, is that Kael means Hashem's the authority, Hashem is the capability. We're not mentioning Hashem's Midos HaDin, rather his authority, his power. Sometimes the word kale or the word ale is used in a non-sacred setting to signify something prodigious, something very potent. Sitkascha kehare ale. Doesn't mean the mountains of God. It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's righteousness is as imposing as these high cliffs, hare ale, which are large, imposing topography or cliffs. So when we recite kale in the Yud Gimel Midos, we're mentioning Hashem's capacity because we trust Hashem has the capacity to grant our wishes, and therefore we're lodging our wishes. So before we daven, we want to invoke that sense, remind ourselves that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has interceded in the past, and therefore our davening is real, and we have expectations, humble expectations, but we're lodging our request with a being who has the capacity and who has the experience or the track record. So a lot of the emunah that took place at the Yamsuf was, of course, a product of tefillah. After we daven, we've touched base with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our emunah surges. But also, a lot of it was the platform of the tefillah. So the tefillah, alongside of Ve'aminu B'Hashem over Moshe Avdo, is not coincidental. The second aspect of tefillah, which is serviced, or at least is expressed in Kriyas Yamsuf, is this phrase, Zeke Livian Ve'u, Elokei Aviv Arumenu. A lot of davening is recognizing we're not the first, we're not the last, we're not the only, we're part of a chain, we're part of a tradition of tefillos. Chazal insert this into a lot of the midrashim surrounding Kriyas Yamsuf. They tafsu umanas shel avosehem. They grab the, at that point, they were first starting to come around to realize their heritage, their past. Remember, slaves are severed from their past. They live in the moment, they live in the present, they're in survival mode, having been liberated, having watched the Egyptians suffer, having been taken out of Mitzrayim, Karm Pesach, they had more of a sense of who their past was. And this is the first time the Jews are mentioning their parents, Elokei Zeki Livi Anveu, Elokei Avi Varamimenu. Once there's a past, there's a voice in general, because voices resonate through generations. You know, there's something deeper to your own experience. It resonates beyond yourself. And also because of the Avos Davin. Tefillos Keneged Avos, Tikvum, and Avram Davin, Yisvatam. So it's not just remembering your past, therefore finding your voice and directing the voice to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's remembering their legacy of davening. And so the sense that they're part of something larger than themselves. And again, I'm always trying to create some degree of connection to keep you thinking about what we're experiencing. This is a very interesting crisis. We're facing the crisis with our limited families. So in some ways, we're severed from the past generation, and that's such an important part of our Pesach, to have an intergenerational dynamic. But in other ways, this whole crisis is in some ways deference to the older generation. Again, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, and there's constant mutations and the health hazards lie far beyond, but at least right now, so many of the people that are suffering with this are elderly people and immunocompromised people, and in other societies, there'd be a sense where if man weren't so moral, well, why not? They're elderly people. Why should the entire society grind to a halt? And survival of the fittest. And I talked about this morning in my two-minute video. And we're saying, no, we value life. We value life in any way, shape, or form to protect and preserve life. And, of course, we value the life of the previous generation because we don't live as dots isolated in space. We live as parts of lines and a lineage, and we pass on traditions. And every country and every ethnicity passes on traditions. So these are two of the tie-ins between the tefillah that took place and the emunah on the one hand and the intergenerational awareness on the other hand. I just want to make a quick mention to Hashem's response. It's an interesting response. Vayom Hashem el Moshe, it's Pasuk Tesvav in Parak Yud Dalet. Vayom Hashem el Moshe, Matitzak Elai, Davel B'nei Yisrael V'Yisa. Why are you davening? Speak to the Jewish people and then let them begin the journey. It's a very strange statement. There must be seven or eight different interpretations in Chazal, full range. I'm not going to delve into each and every one of them. But one interpretation is very interesting. If I have it here, maybe I'll even pull it up. Do I have it open? In a second, please. Just to check if I have it open. If not, then... Nope. Just check for a second. Yeah, here it is. Okay, let me share this screen with everyone. And you'll see an interesting language in the Medrash. Davar Acher, it's a Medrash. Rebbe Omer, Dabel ben Yisrael v'Yisau, Yasiu Dvarim Shayu Dovrim Miliban Emesh. Miliban. Before they travel, and really before they daven, they have to ask themselves, what were they thinking yesterday? Emesh Shayu Omer, yesterday they were complaining, yesterday they denied me yesterday. They scoff. We should have stayed in Egypt. There aren't enough graves in Egypt. It took us to the desert to die. V'yachshav, the idea which, of course, sadly resonates very, very deeply, very horrifically in today's world where there really aren't enough graves in certain places and they have to deal with bodies and then dealing with dead bodies. But yesterday they were scoffing. They're ridiculing V'yachshav at the Omer Marbi B'tfila. Now they're davening. Namely, don't just daven today, but frame your davening by what you felt yesterday and use your davening, which hopefully represents or reflects deeper religious consciousness and awareness, to check what your mindset was yesterday. So davening, we think davening is very prospective, thinking about the future or changing, creating relationships. Sometimes davening can help us look back at who we were before we daven and think about not just our record as daveners and how we daven, but how we thought and how we proceeded. So, and if our davening is to be consistent, then davening is a sense not just to perform tshuva for actions, but for attitudes and for thoughts, and to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for forgiveness for whatever attitudes we had, which are inconsistent with some of the dependency and fragility and the asks and requests that we lodge in the present. I guess that probably resonates deeply with people as well. If we can just turn the clock back to who we were on February 15th and how we behaved on February 15th and what we thought of February 15th, and now it's April 15th, 13th, and what new ideas have we discovered about ourselves, and what new personas have we discovered, and how can we correct who we were? So there's a lot of davening taking place with all the emotional landscape and the emotional terracing that davening highlights. Mitzvah tomorrow at around 4:30, I'll put up something on Facebook or Twitter. Mitzvah Shem will have a quick share before Shavuot Shel Pesach. Okay. How do I get out of this? Let me just see if I can get out of this. I don't know how to unmute everyone. I'll stop share. Okay, it's good to see everyone. Everyone have a good night. And prepare for Yom Tov.
Thank you.
We need to go to